Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, the opulence of the absolute, text number 23. Rudranam Sankaras Chasmi. Viteshu Yaksha Rakshasam. Vasanam Pavakas Chasmi. Meru Sikari Namaham. Rudranam, of all the Rudras, Shankara, Lord Shiva, Cha, also, Asmi, I am, Vita Isha, the Lord of the treasury of the demigods, Yaksha Rakshasam, of the Yakshas and Rakshashas, Vasunam, of the Vasus. Pavaka, fire. Cha, also. Asmi, I am. Meru, Meru. Shikarinam, of all mountains. Aham, I am. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. There are 11 Rudras, of whom Shankara, Lord Shiva, is predominant. He is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord in charge of the mode of ignorance in the universe. The leader of the Yakshas and Rakshashas is Kuvera, the master of the demigods, and he is a representation of the Supreme Lord. Meru is a mountain famed for its rich natural resources. There are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita, and they're divided into three different parts. First six chapters, as Prabhupada said, the living entity is described as non-material spirit soul, capable of elevating himself to self-realization by the different kinds of yogas. In other words, the first six chapters deal with the process of elevation from material consciousness spiritual consciousness, beginning with karma yoga, working without fruit results. It's not that we don't get results, and especially in the summer that we get a lot of fruit. So we're not against fruits. But the idea is not to be attached to whether we get something good or something bad. Not that we're working to get something bad, but we should just do our work, and whatever results come, at least in karma yoga, the results are Krishna's results. And when one is working in karma yoga, then one's consciousness becomes elevated to the point where one's miseries are diminished. And therefore, because practically most people in the material world in ignorance are simply working to diminish their misery. And when one's misery is diminished, then one can concentrate on something superior, namely how to live a more peaceful life. Peaceful life means to know a little bit of, at least the amount of knowledge to know what's important in life. Those who are unintelligent, they have no idea what's important and what's not. And therefore, they're running after things which are completely unimportant. And not only unimportant, but they're running after things that are actually causing them harm and stress, which they're always trying to counteract by means which cause them more harm and more stress. So that's called ignorance. But if one is even in ignorance, then he has a choice. He can become more in ignorance, or he can find someone or someone who have some knowledge who can teach him how to regulate his sinful activities at least. So that one is less stressful and less harmful. Just like a Shudra, He may be attached to eating meat, but he's advised to go to a secluded place and take a goat and slash its throat and whisper in its ear that, my dear goat, that now I'm killing you, but don't worry, in your next lifetime or in a future lifetime, you'll become a human being and I'll become a goat and you can slash my throat. So, in that way, although one is in ignorance, if you repeat that mantra enough times, it might sink, it might give one the realization that eating goats is not a very good activity. So some regulation is there. And then if one has enough regulation, one's intelligence is not stolen as much by illusion, then one can figure out what's important in life. Material life. That what's important in material life is good food, in case you haven't noticed it. Good, tasty, healthy food is the most essential thing in life. Anad bhavati bhutani. And food not only consists of things that we eat with our, but also even water is food. Without drinking water, we can't live very long. So that's also considered to be food. And air is also food. Dhruva Maharaj, he underwent austerity. The first thing he gave up was eating kapita fruit. And then he gradually ate leaves that fell from the tree. And then he gave up, he only drank water. And then he gave that up and was only breathing air. So we think we're very advanced in sense, in controlling our senses. Then we should first give up eating, and then we should give up drinking, and then breathing. And then we can consider ourselves quite advanced in sense control. Even Raghunath Das Goswami was only eating a pad of buttermilk, a little bit of buttermilk, every other day would condemn himself when he was eating it, that he was too much engaged in sense gratification. That standard, of course, in this age, we shouldn't even think about what to speak of trying to imitate. But at least one should understand the important thing is food, and then air, fresh air, clean water, and also nice relationships. So that's called karma yoga. Understand what is actually valuable and give up this idea that we need more and more, or if we don't have enough, then we're going to suffer. Well, at least that we won't be happy by getting as much as we want. That one is simply happy for whatever Krishna gives. Especially in terms of the important things, namely food, clean water, fresh air, and relationships. Therefore Krishna says, patram pushpam balam toyam yome bhakta priyachati. So all that is included there. A leaf for eating, some water, flower for smelling the air, sweetening the air. That if it's offered with love and devotion, Krishna will accept it. Then there's Jnana Yoga and the first six chapters that actually we're not this body, that we're a higher or consciousness, and that we survive this body, and that there are better and better places to go to, from the heavenly planets to the Maharloka, to Siddhaloka, to Brahmaloka, to Brahman. But beyond Brahman, beyond the conception of liberation from this, is to develop a spiritual body. So that's the middle six chapters. Bhagavad Gita from 7 to 12 deal with the activities of the soul. And then the last six chapters deal with the knowledge necessary to remain fixed in devotional service. The three modes of nature, nature and joy and consciousness, the Supreme Lord is the controller of the universe. The yoga, the supreme, and divine and divine natures. So these are knowledge which will keep us fixed in devotional service, jnana yoga. But the middle six chapters deal with pure devotional service, and still in Bhagavad Gita, in this chapter, we find Krishna being described, identifying himself with all the with different things in the material world. Now, one may wonder, what is the point in the Bhagavad Gita? There's only 700 verses. Why does Krishna keep on talking about his material energies? Why doesn't he just talk about his spiritual energies? Well, because Bhagavad Gita was not spoken to residents of the spiritual world. It happened to be spoken to us who happen to be residents in the material world. And therefore, unless we come to the platform of being able to see everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna, then there's no question of going to the spiritual world. Now, of course, here it's talking about things that we have no perception of. Rudranam Sankarashasmi, that of all the Rudras, he's Lord Shiva. So most people will hear that and say, well, that's nice. I'm happy for him. Because they don't know about Lord Shiva. But of course, as the Krishna consciousness movement may expand itself in the future, then people will find out about Lord Shiva. Now, India, practically everyone knows Lord Shiva. As a matter of fact, probably Lord Shiva is equally, if not more popular than Lord Krishna or Vishnu. Of course, it's not a competition. Because Lord Shiva is the best of all the devotees. He's the Vaishnava Yata Shambhu. Of all the Vaishnavas, Lord Shiva is the best. But Lord Shiva is also not independent of Krishna. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, it's not even in this chapter, it's in the chapter of Jnana Yoga, Sarvata Pani Padam Tat, Sarvata Shri Shimo Mukam, Sarvata Shriti Ma Lokan, Sarma Vritti Tishtite. Everywhere are his hands and legs, and eyes and faces. In this way, the Super Soul pervades everything. So in the Bhagavad Gita, well, not in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna says elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he incarnates himself amongst all the different species of life and amongst the demigods in the higher planetary systems, etc., then we may wonder, does Krishna, is there an incarnation, a mosquito incarnation? Or a beautiful cockroach incarnation? Well, in one place, Prabhupada seems to imply that, and another place, Prabhupada says, actually, these are Krishna's vibhutis. They're also considered to be incarnations. When he says that of the Rudras, he's Lord Shiva, then Lord Shiva is also, of course, Lord Shiva is a guna avatar, but he's also considered a vibhuti, or a manifestation of Krishna's potency. Just like each one of us, we're also manifestations of Krishna's potency. Krishna says, know that at the end of this chapter, what does Krishna say? Anyone know? Do you know Adi Purushavur, the last two verses? Yes. Ataiva bhavanai tena kim gyatena putvarjana Vishtabraham idam kritsnam ekam stena sito jagat. For whatever is beautiful, mighty in this creation, yadvat vibhudimat sattvam srimad orjitam evava, know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. So everything is Krishna's vibhuti. Nothing here is independent of Krishna. Nothing is outside of Krishna's jurisdiction, but we're thinking that there is. And therefore, our primary education is to learn how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. Unfortunately, modern society is making an endeavor to convince people that there's nothing related to Krishna. And that since we're trained like that, it takes a long time to be able to perceive things properly. But in order to do that, the idea is whatever material energy was within our personal influence to try to utilize that in Krishna service. And the most direct influence we have within our influence, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada once said, they asked him, how many disciples do you have? And he said, I have 4. So they were quite surprised that you seem to be a big acharya. So many people seem to be serving you. How is it you only have 4 disciples? He said, actually, the only 4 disciples I really have are my 2 hands and legs. Because they're the only ones who actually do what I want them to do. So actually, within our most immediate influence, apparently, is our body. But even that doesn't work out so well sometimes. Sometimes we want our body to do something, and it does something different from what we want it to do. Sometimes we want it to do something, and sometimes we're confused what we actually want. We know we shouldn't do something, but we want to do it anyhow. And then we don't want to do it, but we really want to do it. So, what do we actually have influence over? We only have influence over one thing. Does anyone know what that is? Ananda, you look like you almost know the answer. No. What's the one thing we can influence? Yes, Adi Purusha. We can't even do that. The material nature is said to be the... I'll give my reference so you can give yours. I'm referring to chapter 13, text number... Karna karna kartrive hetu prakriti uchite purusha sukadukanam bhoktrive hetu uchite. Yeah, but nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, but that's, you know, and the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. But how is he the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments? Yes, desire. That's the only thing we can do, is desire. As soon as, if we desire in the mode of ignorance, we'll cause suffering. Desire in the mode of passion will cause suffering. Desire in the mode of goodness will cause less suffering. There's different degrees of suffering, which we call enjoyment. The less we suffer, the more we think we're enjoying. Or sometimes if you're really in the mode of ignorance, the more you suffer, the more you think you're enjoying. But beyond that, we can also desire spiritually or transcendentally, and therefore we actually have real enjoyment and no more suffering. No more material suffering. So that's within our influence, and therefore Krishna is trying to convince us how to change our desires. And the main desire is to utilize things in Krishna's service within our influence, and the result of that is that we'll gradually see how everything and everyone is related to Krishna. Then we'll actually be able to appreciate the potency of the holy name. That is that by chanting Hare Krishna, will experience ourselves directly in Krishna's association. Now these other things, in that association, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, it's not even the middle six chapters, Brahmarpanam Brahmahayavir, Brahmagno Brahmahutam, Brahmayavatena Gantavyam, Brahma Karma Samadhina. That a person is sure to attain the spiritual kingdom because of his full contribution to spiritual activities in which the consummation is absolute and the things that are offered are the same spiritual nature. In other words, we don't even have to know about Rudra or Meru. Rudranam Sankarashchasmi Viteshu Yaksha, or the Yakshas like Kuvera, Vasanam Pavakas, Gandharvanam, that's a different verse. Vasunam Pavakas Chesmi, or the demigod of fire. We don't have to know about any of these things. Of course, fire we have experience of. But whatever we have, see is beautiful, mighty, whatever else, glorious. We should see that as a manifestation. Whatever is within our experience, we should know that this is Krishna, a manifestation of Krishna and his energies. What does Krishna say about that in Bhagavad Gita? In this, I think it's even in this chapter. Ability. Where does Krishna say, I'm the ability in man? What's that? Yes. Rasaham apsnukundiya pravasi shasi suryo pranava saravedu shabdake purusham rishu. I'm the ability man, or balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarditam dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi varatarshava. That I'm sex life not contrary to religious principles, and yeah, I guess that. I'm the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. Balam balavatam chaham. That's why Prabhupada could watch a movie, like he was on an airplane and he saw a Charlie Chaplin movie. And he was enjoying it like anything. And then he could get off the plane and tell the devotees, don't watch movies. Because his watching a movie is a little different from our watching a movie. When we're watching a movie, we identify with the hero or the villain, depending on our mood. And we get absorbed in thinking ourselves become powerful or popular or something. We get some sense gratification out of it, out of our imagination. Vicariously we're enjoying. But Prabhupada, he's watched Charlie Chaplin, and he would see that this is Krishna's energy working. How wonderful Krishna's energies are working. How that talent that Charlie Chaplin had is Krishna's empowering him to do that activity, or is actually Krishna doing the activity. But we may not be on that platform, and therefore in our physical activities with the energy, then we should think that whatever I have is meant for Krishna's service. And the result is that when we utilize that object in Krishna's service, it'll help us remember Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example that if you see the shoes of a child on the street, then actually you take care of them. You remember your child just by seeing his shoes. But if you see any old dirty shoes in the street, you may become repulsed by them. Although the shoes of your child may be equally dirty, but still you're not repulsed by them. As a matter of fact, you become affectionate because you remember your affectionate relation with the child. So similarly, if we look at anything in the material world and we don't remember Krishna, then we're simply going to see through the three modes of material nature, and our emotions will correspond accordingly. Sometimes we may be in the mode of goodness and look compassionate upon others, thinking ourselves to be their savior. Sometimes we may look at others in the mode of passion and think we're possibly their enjoyer, and look at others in the mode of ignorance and think about destroying them. So in that way, we see through the modes of nature. But when we see with the eyes of knowledge, by utilizing at least the energies that we have to engage these things in Krishna's service, then we remember Krishna. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Yari Deka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh Amar Agai Gurahana Tari Desh. Whoever we see, we should think about how to help them become Krishna conscious. And that way, one can actually become really a guru and help Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his mission. That's what actually guru means. So here in this 10th chapter, Krishna will give us so much instructions of different objects, some of which, if you were in India and you heard the word Rudranam, because many people are worshippers of Lord Shiva and his different forms in India, it wouldn't seem so strange. And maybe it seems a little less strange to us now, or maybe it still seems as strange, because it depends on our level of faith, we could say, or experience in Krishna consciousness. Now, I can guarantee you, most people haven't seen Lord Shiva and Lord in India either, but they probably prayed to him, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV, Om Shiva, something. Actually, it's... Anyhow, they may have prayed to Lord Shiva and gotten some reciprocation with him, and therefore they have some faith. So here Krishna says, Rudram Sankaras Shasmi. So one should know that actually they're getting this benediction not exactly from Lord Shiva by himself, but they're actually getting it from Krishna. As Krishna will say in another chapter, what it must be, 9. Kamaistaistaridigyana, prapadyante na devata, tam tam niyamam astaya, prakriti niyatak svaya, yo yam 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 danum bhakta, shradi architam ichami, tasya tasya charam shradam, tam eva viridamyaham. That those who are blinded by material desires, they worship the demigods to get different results. But I am in everyone's heart, including that of the demigods, and I make his face steady so that he can get the result from that demigod. So if one doesn't want Krishna, he doesn't like the idea that Krishna is God, Krishna is just too big for him to consider, then some demigod, something more within his realm, more within his consciousness that he wants something back from his worship, some material reward. So therefore Krishna empowers demigods to give worshippers the results of their work so that they get faith that there's someone higher than they are. And when they connect through the Vedic literature that demigod is actually a worshipper of Vishnu, Krishna, then the result is that they gradually may become a worshipper of Krishna. Just like Prabhupada gives this story, that one man, he was watching. He wanted to become a servant of the best. So he was observing that one man was going around and he was collecting taxes and everyone was giving him money. So he thought, well, he must be the most important person in the world, because wherever he goes, people give him money. So he wanted to become a servant to that man. But then he noticed that that person took the money and he gave it to the treasurer. So then he thought, maybe I should become the servant of the treasurer. But then he noticed the treasurer was giving the money to the king. So he thought, let me go become a servant of the king. But then he noticed that the king was giving money to the emperor. So then he decided, let me become a servant of the emperor. But then he noticed that the emperor was going to the temple and praying to God to let him remain as the emperor. So then he thought, well, maybe I should become the servant of God, Krishna. So then he discovered who the most important person was. So the idea of the Vedic literature is gradually introduced, that this person can give you what you want, and then you find out that he gets what he wants from someone else, and eventually you may wind up the conclusion, everyone's getting whatever they want from Krishna. As Prabhupada gives a story, which was actually in China, when the communists took over, the communists went to all the different people, the peasants, and they said, my dear peasants, I guess some of them were worshiping God, and they asked them, who's better, your God is better, or we're better? So they said, well, we think our God is better. So the communists said, go to church and pray to your God, give you your daily bread. So all the peasants went to church and prayed, dear God, please give me my daily bread. And they came out, and the communists asked the peasants, so did you get bread from God? No, we got a few raisins. Well, okay, well, pray to us. Give us our daily bread. So they said, my dear communist friends, give us our daily bread. So the communists called for truckloads of bread and started to distribute it to the peasants. And they said, the communists asked the peasants again, so who's better? Your God is better or we're better? So the peasants said, oh, dear communist friends, you're better because you're giving us our daily bread. The Prabhupada said, if I was there, I would have said, you rascals, where do you get the bread from? You didn't create the bread. You got it from somewhere else. Ultimately, Krishna, through the rain and the grains and everything else, he's giving them the ingredients for the bread. So in the same way, due to misdirection, due to the illusory energy we're more or less covered by, we're taking everything for granted. Yeah, sure, we have this building. Of course, we're supposed to have the building. Because I'm a nice person. Sure, I should have a building. Sure, I should have this body. Sure, I should have this water. Sure, the sun should be there. Because, you know, I need something to shine on me. So we become so dull, we don't realize that these are all gifts coming from Krishna. And it's all his energy. And therefore, we have to go through a gradual process of developing some awareness of how everyone and everything is related to Krishna. So most of this, which is one reason why, a lot of times if you read, Prabhupada's favorite chapter was, does anyone know what Prabhupada said his favorite chapter in Bhagavad Gita was? Well, he may have said different things. One time he said his favorite chapter was the 11th chapter. He liked the prayers. Of course, the most important chapter is the 9th chapter in Bhagavad Gita, but Prabhupada liked the prayers in the 11th chapter. And they're all about amazing things going on. You know, fire is coming out of Krishna's mouth. He's eating all the soldiers. Drona, Bhishma, Jayaratha, they're all being crushed between the teeth in the universal form. So we read this and we think, oh, sure, right. My God, get off, can you take your teeth off me? So most of the Bhagavad Gita is beyond our conception. Punyam Gamadam Prativyam Cha Tejas Chasmiva. These are things within our perception. Krishna keeps on repeating. I am the taste in water, I am the light in the sun and the moon, I am the syllable om in the Vedic mantra, I am the sound in ether and ability in man. So when you think, wow, this is pretty, you know, not very important. When do we get to the Rasa dance? We'll never get to the Rasa dance until we actually, when we're drinking water, we appreciate that Krishna gave us this water to drink. Not, hey, you're up there, we're down here. Give me some more. No, it's due to our attitude that we're in the material world. And part of that attitude is we refuse to recognize that Krishna is actually benevolently giving us these things. We're ungrateful. ungrateful. To different degrees. That when a pure devotee drinks water, he's remembering Krishna and giving thanks to Krishna, love, appreciation to Krishna, that he's so kindly given us this water to quench our thirst. Not that it's expected that Krishna should give me this water because I did so much service for him today. I need some repayment, at least some water, come on. So the attitude of devotion, when we see the sun, to appreciate how Krishna is so kind, he's given us heat and light in the sun. When we see someone's especially empowered by Krishna in some way, to appreciate that this is Krishna. And if we don't see it in relationship to Krishna, then we'll be in Maya, we'll be envious of the person. And what to speak of being envious of Krishna? Even we want to learn from this person, we want to become powerful like they are so we can take their place and become the best. One gets trained up so we can defeat his master. Rather than get trained up to glorify the master. So, this is an attitude that will, this is an opportunity to appreciate things which are within our vision and even some things which are beyond our vision. So how great Krishna is, that's the important thing, is to understand that everything in this material world that we're appreciating, whatever it is, whatever is beautiful, Prabhupada said even a drunkard, if he appreciates that the taste of this wine is Krishna, then one day he'll become a great devotee of Krishna, just by remembering Krishna. Of course, this is not for the devotees. We should drink water and remember Krishna. Not, hey, Krishna, they said in the class, if we drink wine and remember Krishna, we'll become a great devotee. I'll take two glasses. I really want to remember the Lord. No, we have to use our discrimination also. What is meant for us to remember Krishna, and what is meant for others to help them remember Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments? Yes.
Thank you for the lecture, Guru Maharaj. I have a question. I hear a few times from some devotees that you and some Guru ISKCON have some mystical techniques, and by these mystical techniques you give instruction to another devotees, you see mind of these devotees, feelings and basic of this vision, you give instruction for these devotees, or another guru of ISKCON give instruction by these techniques. Is it true?
We can't reveal all our techniques. Anyhow, whatever techniques there are, they're all Krishna's techniques. Oh, this is called Russian hearsay. Every guru is supposed to, as Indra Duimaraj, as I think I said this story before, we were talking about disciples, and he told me he had one disciple came up to him and gave him a big donation. And Indra Maharaj said, this is in Russia, of course, said, thank you very much. What is your name? And the devotee looked at him with wide eyes and said, what? You don't know my name, Guru Maharaj? And then Indra Maharaj said, well, he said, I have so many disciples, I can't remember all their names. He said, I don't have all mystic power. And the devotee looked at him and like, what? You don't have all mystic power? Guru Maharaj, can I speak to you afterwards? And Guru Maharaj didn't tell me if he asked for the donation back or not, but this is not unusual for certain parts of the world. But the fact is, when Prabhupada was asked about his mystic power, what mystic powers he had, he pointed out all his disciples. He said, "That's my mystic power." He said these devotees were all, you know, degraded, doing all kinds of sinful activities, and now they've given all up and they're chanting like jubilant peacocks, Hare Krishna. He said, "That's my mystic power. That's the only mystic power we need. Everything else is not very important." Of course, Prabhupada once said that someone said about turning gold, iron into gold. So Prabhupada said, well, anyhow, we won't get into it. Anything else? Yes.
So I was wondering, how do we see Krishna in the bars in the center of Ljubljana?
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, of all the cities, I'm Ljubljana. It's a new edition of the Bhagavad Gita. Slovenian edition. How do you see it? What do you see outside of Krishna? Where Krishna says, Bhumir apanalo vayu kamano buddhaya cha. What is Ljubljana made out of? All the earth here, all the water, all the fire, everything here is Krishna's energy. It's come from Krishna. Where else did it come from? Certainly it didn't come from Maribor. Or Kran or something. Obviously, Maribor came from Ljubljana's expansion. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grandaraj Kuala, Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita, Kidaj.